some books and get a little smarter, or maybe not, but still have some fun with us. Put down your TikTok, crack open a spine or two. Long form discussions with Gabe, Matt, and Paul for you. Come put your feet up, sit down by the fire. Let's chill for a while. It's book time, let's talk about books.
We are so fucking back.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
We're so back.
I will say that I don't like when YouTube people or podcasters just say we're back. Let's just be back.
No, but we are though.
We are back, but everyone's always like, I'm sorry I had to do this and this. And so, well, we're just back.
Yeah, we're back. We don't owe anyone a fucking explanation. We did put an explanation on Instagram. In a sort of felicitous and sort of surprising turn of events, Matt having a child is actually given him more free time because the government or his employer gives paternity leave. So we reward as a society long-term death of the environment by having children. So good. That's good.
We'll dive right into it.
I'm fucking with you. I love you, Matt. I love your child.
Thanks. I love how my child is sort of viewed as carbon, as a sort of carbon emission herself. Yeah.
It is the case. Yeah.
That she's carbon.
Just as a matter of empirical fact, and I'm not, you know, we don't have to go into it, but if you look at as an individual choice, the number one thing you can do by a order of magnitude to reduce your carbon footprint is not have children.
What about much higher than electric
cars or even biking or not taking plane travel?
What about destroying airplanes, say with bombs or other explosive devices? Getting them off
terrorism.
Yeah, I don't think the list factored in illegal activities, but I'm for it. Blow up plane. I'm here for it.
One single airplane probably has the carbon footprint of 20 people?
Baby?
300?
No, not true, actually. Over its lifetime, a single human is much, much more than a single airplane.
Well, then blow up 3 airplanes.
Or just kill babies.
Oh, my God. Even Cormac McCarthy wouldn't say such a thing.
Speaking of.
Sorry, not sorry about the baby.
Dude, I'm fucking with you.
No, I'm very happy for you. I'm going to see you this week because I have the week off.
Oh, good. Yeah, please.
And are you going to play the Overwatch? Or
I'm going to play Overwatch in my... I have a bathrobe.
Not for a while.
No, I was talking to Paul, dude. I know you're...
Paul.
Matt, can you not play Overwatch?
Matt's feeding his baby milk out of his nipples.
Breasts, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I started sympathy lactating, so, and it turned out to be even more than my wife.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So if you do get on maternity leave or patriarchy leave,
yeah,
you can actually start lactating. That's pretty interesting.
Wait, Matt, who has more leave?
You just need the free time.
Who has more leave, you or Sasha?
Me.
That's fucked up. That's fucking...
Because it's totally contingent. There's a 3-month sort of legal mandate by the state of New York that you still have to kind of negotiate for, and then it's all contingent on the size and insurance policies
of the baby,
the size of the baby, the weight.
Yeah, every pound is 2 weeks of the birth weight or whatever.
Even 9-pound baby, yeah. You get 5 months.
So you're trying to hold it in so that you can get an extra leave. You're like, no,
get bigger, get bigger.
Let him cook, bro.
No, it is fucked up. We have a horribly horribly fucked up system. It should just all be across the board mandatory stretch of time, and it should be generous. But anyway,
the world is fucked. And you know who else thinks the world is fucked? A gentleman by the name of Cormac McCarthy.
That's right.
Whose book we're discussing this evening. This is The Passenger from 2021, 2022?
It's a recent book.
Yeah. So don't tell us we don't read any recent books, because this is recent.
I heard this guy was a decent writer, and I heard some good stuff about this one. 2022.
Thank you.
And it was also released alongside another book, right? Stella Artois or whatever.
Stella Artois.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the champagne of beers, and then yeah.
Dude, that's highlight.
I know. I'm just mixing it. Okay, I'm mixing it up, bro.
I love that, dude. I love that. I got the banquet beer right here. I'm sipping on.
Oh, right on.
I'm sipping on a Coors Heavy.
Sam Elliott approved. Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, is Sam Elliott a Coors drinker?
Well, he's the voice. He's like, oh, Coors, the banquet beer.
Yeah.
Right.
I believe.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're it's one of two, obviously. Stella
Maris is the Maris. Yeah. Is it Maris? Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know, dude. It's my nasally upstate New York way of saying it. Stella Maris.
Stella Maris. Let me get a bagel.
The passenger.
These were his last two books before he passed.
He passed quickly after their publication. Yeah, quickly.
Yeah. Oh, he became his own passenger.
I mean, that's kind of, I think, the theme, no joke, right?
Sort of true.
Yeah, this feels like a definite sort of, you know, summation, parting statement from someone who knew that their time was limited.
I actually didn't know he died. That's interesting.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't know he died.
Yeah, he talked to Lawrence Krauss and then he croaked.
Whoa. We talked about it on the Discord, I think, which is, by the way, patreon.com/spinecrackers. If you like the show, $2 a month, you can hear the full episodes and join the Discord, which is cool and fun. And there's good people there.
There are good people there. And
it's sort of a bastion of humanity, I want to say.
If I
our little slice of paradise.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Wait, were you just trying to just sneak in character names for Overwatch? I thought that's what you're doing.
Bastion.
Wait, what?
Oh, Bastion. Oh my god.
That's why I said if I may.
You guys are so prime. You guys are so MK Ultra.
We're poison. We're fucking poison. We're Blizzard poison. All right. Well, Matt, this was your choice. So if you could talk through briefly why you picked it and what it's about.
Yeah, I mean, I picked it because I like McCarthy. I'm not like a massive McCarthy completionist.
You're not an Andy. You're not a McCarthy Andy.
No, I read a smattering of the stuff that was, you know, high on pretty much everyone's lists at this point, you know, Blood Meridian.
The Road.
The Road. I read The Road, and I read Sutri. That's it. And then the
No Country for Old Men.
No, you read Stella Maris, didn't you?
And I also read Stella Maris. Yeah. So I think, which, you know, because I it's been now quite a while since I finished this book, so I'm a little probably more foggy on it than you guys, but I did read the other one, so hopefully I can offer some like interesting insights there, because they were like very, very paired in this thematic way. And I think while they were both published as separate books by, I think, McCarthy's intention, like, you know, they commune and speak to one another and kind of change things a little bit when you read them both. So I'll try and talk about that. But yeah, I just picked it because I like McCarthy, and this was like his sort of parting words of a good author that I admire. So,
and I mean, before we get into what it's about, I just, cause I can't let this go, like, nop, like, fuck you with these fucking serrated pages, like, fuck off.
Yeah. Serrated pages. And then like, therapy brochure fucking cover.
Yeah, the covers are god awful.
Honestly, one of the worst covers I've ever seen in my entire
life. Insanely bad. Like, I don't know what you're cooking with the covers. It's like so bad.
I feel like people would think I'm reading like a new age like author about like how to like center myself and like commune with like the
no literally like that's the vibe. Like it's fucking dog shit. Anyway, so, what's the book about, Matt, in your gloss?
So the book is sort of like this kind of I can't even remember, Bobby, right? Bobby Weston.
It follows a character named Paul Hollywood.
Paul Hollywood.
Yeah.
On his journey to find the best baked goods.
Yeah, Bobby Western. No, you're right.
Bobby Western. He's a salvage, deep sea salvage diver living in New Orleans. And he's sort of trying to string together a life with any meaning after the death of a dear sister. And I say that heavily. Yeah.
Oh yeah, we should say trigger warning.
Incest.
Incest.
Yeah.
Shout out Ben.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Do you want to clarify slightly?
Ben loves the edgy books, right? Ben books.
That's all we mean. Ben didn't dabble.
No.
It's just a long running joke that Ben. This is like 2 years ago now. Ben saying that like
Bookshore on Instagram and books, YouTube,
the best relationships in books just have an incest flavor to them or something like that. Yeah.
Well, you'll love it.
Yeah.
For fans of the porn category, this will really you won't last 5 minutes reading this book.
And his sister, who goes by the name of Corey Chase.
her name is Alicia.
Yeah,
the
name is actually kind of weird because she has like five different names isn't she referred to as like, isn't it spelled differently a number of times? Like her schizophrenic hallucinations refer to her by many different names, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But you don't really get that. They kind of open the book, but anyway, I'll just try and do the rough and dirty.
Anyway, yeah. Sorry.
Summary. I mean, it's not really much of a story that has like a beat by beat narrative that culminates in anything, I think, again, by design. So it's just like Bobby Western, he's just floating aimlessly in his life as a deep sea salvage diver in New Orleans. He gets a job salvaging a plane that's crashed. I forget where exactly.
I think it's in Mississippi. I think it's off the coast, like in the Gulf of Mexico and Mississippi. I forget the name of the town.
Yeah, I don't remember.
And he's down there.
Pass Christian, Mississippi.
Nice. Okay, I like that. Yeah, I knew that would be important to say the name. He's down there with his crew. And in this plane, there is a single passenger unaccounted for whose body is missing from the wreck.
Wreck is weird, right? Like they comment a number of times.
Oh, there's no like, sense of like it exploded.
Is still seatbelted in, and the plane looks like as if it was like placed there.
Yes, yeah. It's like undamaged weirdly, and there's no sign of like any sort of like trouble mechanically or anything. There's a passenger who's missing, and there's also I think it's the black box, essentially the flight log thing.
Yeah, this is a more technical term, but pretty much.
And that's missing. So a mystery sort of commences with this discovery.
It's basically the story of DB Cooper, just about the plane aftermath, right?
For what? Oh, like,
I'm just kidding. Dude, wait, that's actually kind of real.
Yeah, I was thinking
that. Is the passenger DB Cooper?
Is the passenger DB Cooper?
That's fucking, wait, hold on a second, dude. That you're cooking.
Do you want to address that later?
Yeah, maybe. It was kind of a joke, but if
I just want to talk about DB Cooper.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, hold on. So he knows something's weird, and but I think he just basically decides to, he's just gonna sort of move on. And then he starts getting these visitations by what seem like kind of like feds, sort of asking him what he might know about the situation, or like, you know, what his opinions are, or like trying to suss out if he is somehow involved in something that's essentially never made clear.
So
the entire book,
he gets Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones knock on his door, Men in Black. And
I actually just learned all about Men in Black, but the real Men in Black are fucking crazy, like the actual Mothman ones. Have you heard about that?
It's fucking real. Don't even get me started. That's Patreon content, bro.
Yeah, let's see that on the Patreon.
I guess the rest of the book is just a series of conversations, largely in restaurants, with like a cast of characters from his life that he's known in New Orleans and elsewhere in the South. as the feds slowly encroach and freeze his bank account and steal his clothes. And I think they take his cat.
They kill his cat.
They kill his cat.
Or they let it outside and it dies.
It's gone.
I'm just going to say it. I kind of do think it is Mothman, Men in Black type vibe. Because that's the kind of shit that they would do. And I do wonder
if 100%. McCarthy
was influenced at all by these Mothman, Men in Black stories that I recently learned about.
He could have been thinking about what you just learned about, coincidentally.
Was McCarthy visited by the Men in Black?
I would not be surprised.
That I might, yeah, could be the case. At least the government.
Well, and specifically, they freeze his bank account because he uncovered a large sum of money from his dead grandmother, right?
But I don't think that's the. I don't think that the inference.
That's the pretext. That's the pretext, yes. Right?
Right. That they like used, untaxed.
Because like he didn't pay his taxes on this money.
Mm-hmm. Right. So his life just slowly kind of shrinks to nothing as he's like closed in on by these kind of just. Anonymous like government forces, and he's just sort of talking about how he doesn't want to do shit about it with a bunch of friends of his, and then he ends up sort of in self-isolation in Spain with nothing
I forget the name of the island, but it's the island next to Ibiza, right? Fornesa for something, I forget.
I don't know.
So
not Formosa, that's different.
So, Matt, how much more information do you get in Stella Maris?
Formosa, right?
That sounds more correct, yeah. Stylosa. you don't get, the mystery remains completely unsolved because the Stella Maris is all like 10 years prior or something.
Okay.
Before Alicia's suicide. So the mystery itself is not solved.
Formentera.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think.
Well, we didn't touch on that, right? Because there's also these interstitial chapters that are from Alicia's perspective,
right?
Where she is, you know, this is his incestuous love, his sister who is a. Like turbo genius, like math prodigy, gorgeous, you know, whatever. Like,
yeah, man. Bobby's like a brilliant, and then his sister is like an alien level genius.
Yeah,
according to everybody.
Yeah, and I think McCarthy was kind of like hinting at like, how could you not
what
like want to fuck your sister
if she's that much of a 10? She's basically an 11.
She goes up to 11.
She goes up to 11 for sure.
And so we have these interstitial chapters with her interacting with what we learn over the course of the book are her schizophrenic hallucinations, right? Mm-hmm. The most prominent of which is a figure by the name of the Kid, who's kind of this dwarfish, kind of like circus ringleader, right? And like the whole
called the Thalidomide Kid.
Yeah, right. And the whole thing is that he always shows up in her room and brings these kind of like circus performers. Like there's people playing like banjos and people doing like dances and shit.
Yeah.
And he it seems like he has this weird. He also seems to have sort of like a fed like motive. Like trying to sort of like draw out of her some insight that he wants via these like very bizarre means. Like he always shows up and is like, oh, like I've read your diary. Like I've seen your notes. Like, well, like let's think about, you know, this mathematical concept in some way. And then he brings out some fucking minstrel performer. You know what I mean? Right. Like it's very strange.
But he's always sort of talking in nonsense. I think,
right?
Like what Alicia considers him to be herself is like kind of an intentional entity, like sent from some other place to scramble her signals, like to make nonsense out of her kind of pattern-making logician's mathematical brain. for her own good also. Like, you know, he's sort of regarded a little bit as potentially like maybe an angelic figure or something between an angel and a demon, because she argues she's not schizophrenic. It's the apparitions are like a symptom of her heightened intelligence and perception. So, well, Stellamaris is her just talking to a psychiatrist or a therapist. This is the whole book is just a conversation with between those two people.
I think I'd be interested in that one. It sounds interesting. I will say that I, from the little bit I know about schizophrenia, which might be a little bit more than most, it didn't seem like schizophrenic episodes to me. You know, it kind of seemed like she was actually correct about her own diagnosis. Like, I don't know. It just didn't really match up in terms of what I know about like a schizophrenic break.
But how do they play in The Passenger? Did you guys feel like, was it like confusing to like have the throwback to that situation?
And well, I thought myself a little bit. The whole book was confusing to me.
Paul's so, schizophrenic.
It's heavy. No, I have like fucking ADD, and any book that's like super heavily just people talking and not really like, it wasn't really clear who was talking a lot of the time, that wigs my fucking brain out. So when the
McCarthy started, famously writes in like non-attributive dialogue, right?
I was gonna ask you guys about that, if he does that in all of his books.
Yeah,
because it makes me a little more hesitant to read other ones because it's like daunting for my fucking little pea brain.
He pretty much does.
But yeah, I mean, the episodes, were you saying, were you confused about them like being sprung upon you in the book? Because I would kind of have to like go back and read to be like, oh, I'm suddenly in one.
No, it's just that like I didn't have like a full sense of, again, not to just harp on the other fucking book, and I apologize, but like I do think that there is a sort of built-in incompleteness that kind of leaves things lopsided with just reading one or the other. Like I like Bobby's whole quest is just this kind of like unconsummated, you know, literally with her sister, with his fucking sister, and then also with this like faux mystery that ends up being kind of unimportant, I think. Because one of the things that was interesting to me, and I don't know if you guys, can confirm or deny, but like that a portion of this was supposedly written in like the 80s.
Yeah, I think he started this book in the 80s.
Is that when D.B. Cooper happened, or is that 70s?
No, D.B. Cooper was like
60s?
60s or 50s, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
D.B. Cooper, 1971.
Oh, okay, 70.
Oh, disappeared, yeah, 1971.
Yeah.
But wait, where was I? But like, yeah, you know, it's interesting because I my feeling on the matter is like maybe he started out genuinely and earnestly writing some sort of cool like political thriller or something, and then was like he just had that start sitting there from his earlier writings and decided it like worked well as a something to completely abandon as like the sort of the notion of that kind of thing you're even talking about, Paul, like a plot.
Yeah, it like, doesn't have
we've plot. Lost the plot, and who even gives a shit anyway? Like, it's about interpersonal relationships, even to your own detriment or something like that. Like, because Bobby does seem to like really, even though he's kind of taciturn and doesn't really seem to talk or be that great of a interlocutor, he's got a lot of really like fucked up but close friends.
And he's I mean, there's a lot there. I mean, I think like, you know, he, as you say, he has a lot, and one of them prominently dies over the course of the book,
right?
And then revisits him later as a sort of spiritual entity. And I think it's important to mention that Bobby himself is also visited by the kid later on in the book, right? Which I think sort of speaks to the potential sort of congenital condition, right, of maybe schizophrenia or genius or both,
or ghosts
or the reality, yeah. or the reality of the kid as something that's actually,
or maybe it's, yeah, maybe he's just fucking real. Yeah.
Well, one perspective I heard from a YouTube review of this book is someone,
shout out Cliff.
It was not Cliff. I'm sure Cliff reviewed this book, but I did not watch that one. No, it was someone talking about actually relating it back to like the collective unconscious and fucking
young
a little bit, which perked my nips a little bit. Because
Jordan Peterson.
No, I'm talking about Ghosts. Young love Ghosts. And I was actually going to ask you guys, because you've read other books by McCarthy, is like, does he have that kind of theme in the other books too? Like, does he dabble in ghostly activity? Paul,
he actually wrote a article. He was actually obsessed with I feel like McCarthy was, everyone's obsessed with like consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. McCarthy was very, very obsessed with unconsciousness. Because a lot of the stuff about math and Stella Maris is sort of like, you know, when like oh, I'm so brilliant, I don't even know how I do it. It just like the equations solve themselves. And like he was very obsessed, like in like a genuine way, with like where is that work being done? Like,
yeah,
things seem to be like pulled from the ether for people in a way that's far more fascinating to him, was like far more fascinating than the like frontal cortex cognition or whatever of like actively using logic and reason to solve. It's the stuff that just happens in the background and like kind of resolves itself that he found like weirder. He's genuine. Yeah. Kind of shit. I think you're right. I mean, like, I think he's really like freaked out and fascinated by the unconscious and the subconscious.
Yeah. And just like the unknown.
Pretty much. Yeah.
And yeah. And I got the vibe that he was obsessed with like, mental illness as it relates to the unconscious,
or and also to genius, I think, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think like there's a moment where I forget if this is Bobby talking about Alicia or Alicia describing her own experience or a flashback of her talking to him about it, but she basically says that exact thing that you just said, Matt, right? Like it's it just kind of like appears to me in such and such a way, right? It's not that I'm like deducting or thinking or whatever. It's just this kind of like preternatural, just kind of like vision.
So it's like a Goodwill Hunting type talent where he's like,
yeah,
how does Beethoven play the piano? He just looks at it and he can play. And that's, yeah, he's like, I just look at a math problem and I can fucking play.
Yeah, like if you
level of unconscious genius.
I think he even sort of pits the unconscious against the conscious as sort of an entity all its own, the unconscious, that kind of despises the conscious. Like he sort of sees them as in like the conscious is this like kind of nouveau riche, like upstart, young, like new hip thing. And the unconscious is like far older. And like he has this weird thing where they're like almost in like they are in a sort of duel with each other, like, you know,
is that
I mean?
The kid, do you think that's the kid?
I would imagine it's sort of the kid and stuff like that. If you want to read the paper, it's called The Kukule Problem, where he sort of talks about it like earnestly. But
that's a Jungian idea though. From the two books that I kind of comprehended by Jung, he talks a lot about like the dueling sides of the unconscious and the conscious.
Yeah.
And that space is where like the mystery resolves. So like, you know, McCarthy lived for how fucking long at Santa Fe Institute?
Well, yeah, we need to talk about the Santa Fe Institute.
Sorry, I'm jumping all over the place.
No, I know it's a jump all over the place type book. But
I'm also fried. I haven't slept. I have an infant.
A baby. Matt has a baby. Yeah. But I don't know how long he was there, but a long time.
So I think like, I feel like his intention there was to like just finally just try and surround himself with the smartest people and just see, I don't know, how heightened and rarefied an air he could bring himself to breathe, to see, you know, if there's any insight there, which I feel like per usual kind of no, like kind of like insights, but insights into the like extent of limitation and a deeper fascination, therefore, with like whatever's beyond that. Or, you know, it's sort of like the, I don't know if it really tracks, but like Murnane's forest, like the purlieu, like the forest line. Mm. Like, you know.
Cisco.
Yeah, the purlieus. Sort of like
J.R. or Tolkien forests.
Treebeard.
Treebeard saying you shall not pass, right? Am I getting that right?
Yeah. I mean, I think like one of the things that, I mean, fuck, like we're all over the place. And I think that's natural with this book. If you read it, you'll understand kind of where we're coming from. And I understand why people would hate this book, right?
Yeah, very mixed reviews.
There's no plot. You know, Paul's just correct. And one of the more frustrating aspects is that it starts out with like this seemingly very interesting plot, right? This kind of like mystery novel fucking.
Dude, it's kind of like a Percival Everett type.
It's like an Agatha Christie, you know, like there's this plane that looks like it was placed in the ocean and one person's missing and like.
The government,
and, yeah, right. Like yeah. you also yeah. get shades of something like Libra, like from DeLillo, right? Like there's a sure. like governmental deep state conspiracy coming
Lost?
After this.
You get some Lost this, vibes.
Yeah, no, 100%, absolutely. Yeah. And I also, and maybe this is more for the Patreon because this is not like I'm just kind of like articulating references that I saw. I saw a lot of Under the Volcano references in this book.
Really,
A couple, but I think they were sort of prominent. But we can maybe that's a Patreon comment.
Yeah, yeah, anyway, say that. I'm curious.
Yeah, anyway,
what? He's in bars a ton. I guess that's one.
Well, no, but there are references to the specific names of volcanoes that are from.
Oh, he does say the names of
from under, yeah, yeah,
you're
yeah.
right. You're
and
right,
I think
yeah.
there's a couple other moments where that comes out too.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I totally get why someone would hate this book, because it doesn't have a plot. It doesn't have like. And it arguably even worse, it suggests a plot and then abandons it.
Right.
Right. Which is sort of like you said, Matt, like it was also written over the course of what, 40 years, like starting in the 80s. And I think in that sense, it's like a deep challenge to the reader. Are you going to engage or not? And I think there's two sort of ways to read that to me. One is this kind of avant-garde, interesting literary experiment that McCarthy is doing here with his last text or his last set of texts. And the other is perhaps more cynical, but that he was just kind of lost. With his time at the Santa Fe Institute, being around these, you know, brilliant mathematicians and physicists, and trying to distill those insights into something literary. I think it's an interesting kind of case study in the genius of literature versus the genius of something like science or math. And the ways in which they don't necessarily fit together.
Yeah, I mean, there's even like a hierarchy. Like Bobby even admits, for instance, like, you know, barring like art versus the hard sciences or something, but even like physics, Bobby's like, I had to like go down a level and do physics because I couldn't do math.
Yeah, right.
Like my sister can.
Pure mathematics, yeah.
Right, exactly. Yep. And I think there is like a you know, it becomes more adulterated and can and more noise than signal as you move down into the dirty work of like, yeah, maybe writing a novel.
Well, he also wanted to be a race car driver, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think he was just doing some Death Wish shit, though. I think he was literally a little bit of Holman.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, true.
Right. Dead sister. Just like, I'll just freak myself out and like tempt death for the rest of my life now.
And there are so many like weird little plot points that we haven't even brought up. Like Paul is bringing up now, which I think we should talk about. Bobby spends time as like a Formula 2 driver, which is like kind of
what even is that?
I assume it's kind of like the minor leagues of Formula 1, right? Which is, you know, European NASCAR, where they drive the small cars and the whatever.
Like Ford v Ferrari shit, yeah.
Yeah.
You probably thought it was a good idea because he does have kind of like a NASCAR name.
Yeah.
Bobby Western.
Come on.
Perfect name for a fucking NASCAR driver.
And also just like a perfect McCarthy character name.
Yeah.
Like it almost made me laugh every time I read it because he is most known. I mean, I suppose perhaps most known for The Road, but like I think most respected for Blood Meridian, which is a Western. And I just think I just thought it was funny every fucking time.
Because the title is in his name.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, literally, like Bob Western.
Yeah.
John Road.
Yeah.
I think he was probably fucking around with that kind of thing, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it, I haven't read The Road, but there's no character names in The Road, right? Is that true?
It's just the boy.
I think it's just the boy. And like
that. Oh, and the man.
The father, the man.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Viggo Mortensen.
I think it's sort of probably a combo of what you're describing, Gabe. I think he kind of literally lost the plot, which you could read as like enthusiasm for the form, and then saw an opportunity to use it as the more heightened avant-garde example you're talking about, you know, of like a challenge to the reader and like a writing out of his own intellectual maturation over that 40-year period. Where he's like, ooh, like, you know, like, guys, a Formula One driver and the government's after. And then slowly it's just like, he's just kind of spitballing with dudes in bars. And
yeah,
he's brilliant. And he has this very strange relationship with his own intellect as nothing, as something that doesn't really work for him. It doesn't really save him from an emotional life that he's unable to control and all this kind of stuff. And like, that's the sort of primal struggle.
Incest.
Know, you know what I mean?
Incest.
Incest, yes.
Did McCarthy have a hot sister?
I don't know. He had an ex-wife who brought a gun, who stored a gun in her vagina and brought it.
True. That's a real story.
Yeah. Holy shit. What kind
pretty,
of gun?
Pretty sick. That's a very Cormac McCarthy book style thing to happen as well.
Well, I think like and I think we do need to talk about the incest. And
of course.
And we need to talk about a number of other things, but it seems to me that like the central philosophical worry in the book that it seems like McCarthy is trying to work through is, and I think it's important, right, that these two characters are both brilliant mathematicians, like one more brilliant than the other. This, you know, Alicia being the more brilliant of the two. But the central question is, can the world be reduced to number? And if so, what does that mean, right? Like, how does that impact our sort of phenomenological existential experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that both of these characters are sort of reckoning with that in different ways. Alicia being the more, you know, sort of brilliant of the two, the one who kind of like sees the world as number, has the worst experience. She fucking kills herself. And then there's this weird kind of like humanistic intervention in Bobby's experience, which is that he's in love with her, right? Mm-hmm. Which is kind of this wild card in the kind of like mathematical experience of the world, the human element.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a little bit like, I was thinking of the movie Pi a little bit reading this book.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally. Just like the influx of mathematical genius can, just turn you into like the most extreme, human emotional, like states of being. And I think maybe that's something McCarthy believes. I don't know. I think that incest is pretty extreme. So that's Bobby's case. And Alicia's case is just schizophrenia and suicidal ideation.
I mean, I have like a, I have like an arty sort of metaphorical take on Bobby and Alicia, but.
Say it, spit it out.
Well, I mean, and again, I heard this from other people, but there's like the whole quantumly entangled particle notion, and then mixed with what? Like, what? Mixed with also like, I think another important piece of background information is their dad worked with Oppenheimer at Los Alamos during the invention of the atom bomb. And
yeah, we have to talk about that too.
Yeah, not to bury the lead. I mean, there is a mushroom cloud on the cover of the book if you put them two of them together. But so then there was also
like, I love Christopher Nolan. I love
God,
I love damn.
Oppenheimer. I love the Irish actor guy.
Yes. Yeah. Cillian, he's so silly.
Yeah, I tried to watch that show. He was in the Irish gangster show.
Dude, you can't understand it. You have to have subtitles.
You do, but I couldn't watch it after like three episodes. I was like, this is a stupid show. I don't like it.
Ooh,
it's pretty good, but whatever.
I don't like when like shows that are supposed to be set in like the 20s play contemporary music. It pissed me off. So it's like I cannot get by that at all. I was so pissed off. And there's like the girl bartender, the blonde girl. She's like, I'm gonna be the bartender, whatever.
Yeah.
Look what I can do. I can pour like the spit and it'll get on my hands and I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care, yeah.
And she's like starts singing and she sounds like freaking like Lady Gaga. I'm like, what? This the set pieces, the accents, everything's historically accurate. And then you're just like making these little changes to make it appear cool to like freaking lacrosse bros in modern day, and I was like, fuck you, done with the show. I'm gonna watch The Office.
Oh god, you watch The Office instead, which they're also watching.
Yeah.
The lacrosse bros with their girlfriends. I mean, listen, it's all worth it to me for Tom Hardy's character.
Yeah, I've heard that he is in that show and he's really, really good.
He's good. I don't know what to tell you. You want to hear more of my lame theories about Bobby and Alicia?
Yeah.
So there's the quantumly entangled particle theory. There's the nuclear fission theory, where their separation is like crazily destructive, and they need each other. And then my own
like atoms, like atoms of some kind.
Yes. And then my my middle ground interpretation of those two is, I think, equally valid. Is like, you know, Alicia is like almost like a brain and Bobby's like the body, and they need to like, you know, kind of unify, because like Alicia's whole book in Stellamaris,
body western
yeah, dude. That's a sexy name right there. They need to like fuse, like if they got the fusion rings from Dragon Ball Z, but
I just spit all over my computer screen.
Because Alicia's whole book, she's just conversing with somebody, mm-hmm. and then Bobby's like hurt. He went in a coma. He's diving in the mud. He's hanging out with like prostitutes and like criminals and bars. He's drinking. There's tons of eating in the passenger.
Yeah.
So he seems more like of a corporeal entity to me, and they like need to consummate it. But that consummation between like the sort of animal side and like the fucking elevated discorporate mind side is a perversion. Like it's kind of a shitty, unconsummatable thing, really. And it glitches out when it needs to work together. And yet that's like sort of what everyone's doing with their conscious and subconscious minds. That's my lofty sort of read of like their relationship and why incest might be a direction. Although McCarthy's never been shy of just like being gross sometimes.
Yeah. I buy it. I mean, I like it. I don't really understand why to get to that level when just discussing like two siblings who are super smart. Well, it seems again, like such a huge idea he was going for. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm deeply on the fence about the incest subplot.
Right.
I'm on the fence how?
On the fence in the sense that like I hear what Matt is saying, like for sure, about the kind of like corporeality versus the sort of like ethereal nature of Alicia's kind of like mental life as this kind of like dyadic, like binary star sort of like
right.
You know, or orbiting sort of relationship that one can't really exist without the other. But I also as a sort of like literary matter, like it just doesn't motivate me that much, right? Like I just didn't kind of feel it. Not that I would want to necessarily.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right.
But like, it just didn't. It just didn't sort of like come through, right? Like, I wonder if this same story couldn't have been told as if Bobby could have been just straight traumatized by the suicide of his sister. Without the incest angle. And I'm just like not totally sure like what that adds. You know what I mean? That couldn't have been achieved via other means. And I like I said, I'm on the fence.
Well, that's how I rationalize it to myself, was that, you know, there is something unnatural about the consummation. That's the only way it makes sense to me.
And it never happens, right? And I think there's a moment where Bobby's talking to one of his friends. And he kind of confesses, like, I was in love with my sister. And before he can even say anything, he's like, no, we didn't, because I know that's where you're going to ask. And the guy goes, no, I wasn't. I forget. And this other character whose name I'm forgetting off the top of my head is also Shedan? Interesting. Shannon. Yeah. Shedan, that's how I said it in my head. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, I wasn't going to ask that. And Bobby just goes, yeah, you were. And the implication being, you wanted to know if we had sex, right?
Right, yeah.
And Bobby saying, we didn't, we never did. So like you said, Matt, like it was never consummated.
And it's made more difficult by what I consider the device of never having them coexist at any point in the reality of the book. Like they literally get two different books for themselves. Like they're fully separated, even like physically in text form, which does make it hard for you to really. There were some moments of remembrance, but it was more like cute brother sister shit, like the actual like romance and the tragedy of it. Yeah.
And their trauma, they're bonded via the trauma of their mother and father's experience working on the nuclear bomb. Right.
Yeah.
Because their mother was, and there's a lovely kind of historical flashback when their mother is working as a sort of uninformed kind of like, you know, secretary in this secret facility, and their father, who's, you know, in the context of that situation. It's like you're not supposed to talk to anybody. He passes her a sort of like note or says to her like, hey, can you call me later or something, right? Yeah. And it's cute, like it's affecting, like that scene like worked for me, like that really clicked in terms of how they met and then the kind of long-term implications of how that relationship in this secret underground fucking like nuclear research bunker sort of like poisoned not only their own relationship but the lives of their own children.
Yeah, I think one thing that frustrated me besides it not having a plot was I wanted more of an explanation why an incestuous relationship in Bobby's head was formed. And for like going into it knowing or suspecting that it was going to be more about like the unconscious, I was really excited about that because I listened to that review before I read the book. I was just really hoping for some sort of just more scenes or something or more of an explanation why he would have those feelings towards her. And the only thing I could really piece together was like
smart hot,
but also like the parents' relationship being like, I don't know, condensed or closeted in a way could have informed some sort of repressive sexual desires of some kind or shameful, I don't, you know what I mean, like some sort of I guess just shame coming out and infiltrating his sexual being.
I would say I think Bobby is deeply shameful. Like I would say that comes through in his characterization through his dialogues with Shedden and I forget the woman's name there. You know, and I also just want to shout out McCarthy. There's a very I think
well-rendered
characterization of a trans woman in this book, right? Like
what's her name? I can't remember.
I forget off the top of my head. But like the cast of characters that Bobby interacts with, like Matt said, like which I think is like a really good insight, like eating and like hanging out in a restaurant, like figures very prominently in this book, like right. which I really like. And I think it, you know, it's like this My Dinner with Andre type thing where it's like that it really brings out these people, including Bobby. And I forget how that comes back to your point, Paul. I'm sorry, I've lost my.
Well, you should be sorry.
I've been day drinking because I'm Overwatch. Matt has a baby, you know, who knows?
Yeah. No, it's fine.
You're talking about repression and shame, pretty much. Like, why would this thing? I mean, I think Gabe kind of is
right.
Like,
right.
It could also just be like just the poison. Like, I believe the father dies of cancer that's pretty easily traceable to his time out in Los Alamos in the facilities, and then his mother was pretty much neglected by the end of it as the dad just got consumed in work, and then I think he was like very pro the bomb. And like kind of defended its use and was one of those people. And that poison trickling in, you know, in like as a hereditary sins of the fathers kind of thing, which right. Just demented their own interpersonal relationship of brother and sister or something like that. Mm-hmm. Just poisoned the well water. Yeah, and then there's just the alienating fact of like she's just the smartest person ever, and he can't get that experience with anyone else. And then she's like, she's hot, and maybe McCarthy loved the number one porn category on the
he's
online.
A what's it called?
Stepmom.
What do people say?
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. What is it that people say when they're like, I'm only attracted to smart people?
Sapiosexual.
Sapiosexual. Yeah,
yeah, I think Bobby's exactly, sapiosexual.
Yeah. Oh my God.
God damn it. Yeah.
All right. I think we're nearing, believe it or not, an hour. And I I've got a lot more to say for the Patreon, okay, for the patrons. Patreon.com/spinecrackers.
You said that so ominously.
It is ominous. It is ominous.
I got a lot more to say.
No, I do. I do. And I'll say, and this is going to be a hot take for the McCarthy Andes out there. This is better than Blood Meridian. I said it, but
really,
it's still fucked. And he's still deeply wrong philosophically. And I think after reading this book, I have an explanation for why.
Sweet.
And I'll talk about that on the Patreon segment. Patreon.com/spinecrackers.
I'm excited to hear it.
An illuminating earful.
Yeah.
Get ready, folks.
I'm cooking. I'm ready to cook. So, yeah, Matt.
No. So do you want to shoot right into...
Wait, that's Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
I was gonna roll with it. I'm trolling.
I thought you were gonna do a bit where he's like, I can't remember the I can't remember the fucking Game of Thrones thrones, but we can just switch.
I really thought you were trolling.
So who's Khaleesi?
I was trolling.
You're D.B. Cooper Harry.
You're D.B. Cooper Harry.
Harry Potter, D.B. Cooper. I like that.
Dating brother Cooper. Yeah.
Dating brother.
Dating brother Cooper.
Okay, so if you're new to the show, this is the segment where we take the characters from the book we just read and put them in Harry Potter houses.
Wait, do you guys have any words first? Or do
Yes. Oh, I have many words.
I've long since forgotten. I'm sorry.
And, you know, McCarthy famously uses, he makes up his own words. So there were a number of words that I, flagged that I looked up and I found out that they were fake, right?
Yeah,
they were just McCarthyisms. But there are a number that are real that I would use for this, and I can't fucking find them because fucking Knopf used fucking serrated edges.
Yeah, Paige Deckling strikes again and sucks as always. And your cover sucks. Fuck you.
Yeah, they really, I feel like they did him dirty. All right, I got
one. Well, one of my words is pearly dink, which I wrote down and I didn't know was not real until just now that I looked it up. It's not a real word.
I was about to say, it sounds like a dang Harry Potter word.
Pearly dink.
Yeah.
I was excited to look that up and found the definition. Not real. Well, yeah, there's an AI companion on Zoom? What is this? Oh, never mind.
Don't initiate the AI.
Yeah. Do not invite that into your life, dude. It's like bringing a Ouija board in your house. Okay, I have one. Bathypelagic. B-A-T-H-Y.
Something about oceans.
P-E-L-A-G-I-C. In the context is seeking God knows what in the darkness of those bathypelagic depths. And the definition is of fish or organisms inhabiting the deep sea where the environment is dark and cold, approximately 3,300 to 9,800 feet below the surface.
Wow. And B.C.
Depth specifications.
Yeah.
I think I've actually heard that word before.
Really?
I've heard pelagic and bathysphere, so I tried to combine them and I couldn't do it.
Oh, yeah.
I think I've heard it, you know, on like deep sea, Discovery Channel shows.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Star Trek, probably.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me started.
I don't have one. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Dude, what the fuck? How do you not have one?
I just because I met. I don't know. I can't find it.
Dude, cringe.
Sorry.
All right, fine. All right, so this is gonna be fucked up.
Well, who are we even covering?
Bobby Shirley.
Alicia.
And like, we haven't, dude, we haven't even talked about,
don't call me Shirley.
We haven't even talked about so much of this fucking book. I want to talk about the oil rig.
It's all good,
scene.
Dude. I want to talk about Men in Black.
Oil rig scene was legit scary.
So good. Fuck. Okay. Holy shit. Okay. So we have to talk about oil rig. We have to talk about. Yeah. All right. All right.
Yeah. So let's do Bobby first.
Bobby's a Hufflepuff, dude. He's cocked.
Yeah.
Easy
layup.
Like turbo cocked. Yeah. I'm dumber than my sister, and she's hot, and I'm a gooner.
What's more Hufflepuff than being quantumly entangled with somebody?
Yeah. True. Facts. Actual facts.
Yeah. Shedden.
Yeah, Shedden. Shedden's kind of a Gryffindor, dude. He's cooking. Shedden is just cooking. He steals people's he just steals people's credit card information and then buys his friend's dinner.
Yeah.
Like, that's literally his vibe.
Yeah, that's pretty dark Gryffindor.
Dark.
He's Gryffindor. Like a border. He's like, oh, he's arguably like a Slytherin. But he's got like such, but he's got, but his friendships are,
yeah, he uses it for other people, right?
I'm gonna say fierce, strong Slytherin only because I've been playing Hogwarts Legacy, and there's a character that's Slytherin who's also a very loyal and dear, fierce friend to me.
Character,
my character's name is Odo Cardamom. I made it up.
Odo Cardamom, Star Trek, and then.
And
spice?
Then flour.
And then spice.
I really like that.
Isn't it a good name? I thought about it.
It is a good name. Very Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I'm gonna stick with a dark Gryffindor.
Okay. I'm with you. You know, even if he's fucking underage prostitutes or whatever, it's
true.
I guess he's being himself.
You can be a pedophile in any house.
That's true. We said that.
Yeah.
Any house can rape. I think that's what we said. Rape. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we're on the record with that.
Except squibs do more.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about the statistic. We're having a fucking Gallup poll of muggles versus wizards.
Well, now, squibs, I know, squib is different than a muggle.
That's true. You're right.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Matt, come on. Idiot. Absolute hog moron.
Don't tent your fingers at me, motherfucker. Well, squibs actually.
Squib is obviously two magical parents in the come out
with your headset. What are you fucking doing, 4x shit? Fuck you.
Okay, so now I know you're both book Andy, Matt, and you've read the other book.
I know I'm
but I think we can talk about Alicia, because we do get some significant time with her in this book.
Yeah, she's in it. Yeah.
Where does Alicia go?
Pure Ravenclaw, dude. Pure fucking Ravenclaw, bro.
Damn. Okay. Insta lock Ravenclaw.
Yeah.
Dude, she's like a ghost wandering the Ravenclaw Tower right now.
She's got the Hufflepuff quantum entanglement, but she's so in fucking outer space. I would go full Ravenclaw.
She fucking dreams in mathematical equations.
Even her relationship desire for a like to be married and have a child with her brother is like
because
rationalized out.
It is worth flagging that she initiates this relationship.
Yeah, she's the one pushing for it.
Yeah,
like hard. And Bobby wants it, but he's got qualms. And the reason she doesn't have qualms is because she doesn't give a shit. She's just out there, and she's just like, who cares?
You know, she reminds me of an episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation that you and I watched, Matt, with your wife, where the one character, I'm forgetting his name, I'm blanking, he ends up getting zapped by an alien species and becomes, his IQ turns to like 1,000 and then like 2,000, and he ends up hooking his brain up to the
computer.
To the Enterprise, the computer of the Enterprise.
And it, the most computer AI rational thing is to fuck your sister.
That's what I'm saying.
She's the closest. It's Gabe, I don't know if you know this, but the quickest route to any place is a straight line. And she's right there. If you want to talk about utils saved, it's an easy layup. Mathematically speaking, obviously.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
All right. I buy it. I think she's a Ravenclaw. Okay. What
would be your arguments against?
No, I didn't really have any. I just
You meant incest again. I'm like,
against incest, yeah. I just wasn't really sure, you know.
Where else could she be? Hufflepuff?
No, I think there's an argument for Gryffindor. I mean, like, she's just cooking. Like, she's just doing math, and she's just like, you know, I figured it out. Like, I figured math out.
Who she is?
Like, GG, bye.
You know who she is? This doesn't totally... You know the movie they made after Harry Potter movies? Like, the sequel, those in the past?
Yeah, like a magical creature.
Yeah. Beast. Did you guys watch that movie? Yeah.
Fantastic Beasts. I watched the first one, yeah.
Amazing. Remember the one guy that's played by that one actor who played the Flash that ended up going crazy, and he's like a crazy guy?
Ezra Miller?
Ezra Miller. His character in that movie has so much magical power that he's like a puff of freaking bat shit or whatever.
What house is he?
That's what I'm saying. Question. It's like beyond houses.
Oh, it's
he broke the hat.
Shit.
I think she's anyway. A little bit like that in terms of magical abilities.
Yeah, she's
all right. Let's score this motherfucker up.
Dib's not first.
Well, I chose it. So it's
fine. I'll go first. I have a lot more to say, and I feel like we've only scratched the surface. I said earlier, I think this is better than Blood Meridian. I stand on it. And if you are enjoying the show, patreon.com/spinecrackers, I have a whole video, just me, talking about Blood Meridian. I think Corbin McCarthy is a reactionary conservative. And I will talk about that more in the Patreon segment. But as a subjective experience, I think this was sort of like more enjoyable to me. Like, I liked reading this book. I love the meandering. I love the sort of avant-garde nothingness of it, right? Like, there is no, like, Paul's not wrong. And Paul is a plot Andy.
Paul
is a plot Andy, and he loves a good plot.
I love a good plot.
I don't give a fuck. And there's no plot, and I think it works. And like we referenced, which we'll talk about in the Patreon segment, there are all of these weird moments in the restaurants, on the fucking abandoned, like, haunted fucking oil rig. And I really just like it to me, for my aesthetic preferences, this was a fucking page turner. I was like in it. I think McCarthy is deeply wrong philosophically. And I want to talk about Hobbes, who's referenced explicitly. We'll talk about that on the Patreon. It is a 4.37.
Oh,
really?
From me. Good fucking book. He's cooking. Great to read. Fun. Brilliant sentences. Brilliant writer. Fucking totally wrong philosophically. And I think he had his brain melted by these Santa Fe Institute lunatics. Lauren Krauss is a fucking psycho. He's philosophically degenerate, wrong, false. And McCarthy was poisoned by that. Great fucking book though. 4.37
I love the 3 decimal place move, bro.
Damn.
Aww.
Oh yeah, my turn. I didn't think you were gonna score it that high from this podcast review. Interesting. Yeah, this was a frustrating book for me. There was no plot to it. I like a good plot in my books. I was trying to actually, because we haven't done a book in so long, I was like, okay, I want to be just like fresh and clear with my review, not get bogged down by the past, and just like, what was my initial feeling after reading it? My first McCarthy book ever. I was looking forward to it. But at the end of the day, I was like, there wasn't enough here for me. Maybe I missed some shit, but I didn't like how it started out with like a fun plot that was kind of bursting, ready to be filled with plot points and an ending, and didn't really happen. I also just don't like a lot of dialogue without, you know, the very easy thing to do, which is blah blah blah, blah. He said,
right,
blah blah blah, blah. Alicia said. It's like, it's a weird like stylistic choice that kind of annoys me as a reader. So if McCarthy's other books are like that, I don't know what I'm gonna do. Maybe not read them ever. But no, I didn't hate the book. I thought there was like a lot of things that could be like, you know, pieced together if with enough thought that I didn't do. But if you were into it, I feel like you could do that if you wanted to. One thing though that I wanted to bring up was anyone that makes fun of Murakami for not having a clear, concise, well put together plot.
True. Actually,
how could you defend this book and just actually like defend true. It? Because it's way more stripped down than a Murakami book. You know, you can put more together with what Murakami
also loves weird, pervy incest shit.
Exactly. I was like, are they more similar than people think, or they just don't want to equate the
Cormac
two?
Cormac McCurricami.
Yes. Dragon Ball Z fusion rings.
But I think I'm going to give this book a 3.34534.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm, again, as we all know the dynamic here, I'm similarly fine with a meandering, plotless, dialogue-heavy thing. Weirdly, it's like McCarthy's general viewpoint also that kind of trips me up, because he's a beautiful writer. And like, reading this book was enjoyable. Like I really liked it, and there are some insights in here and stuff that I'm like, yeah, damn, right on. He's cooking, as you said, and we eat. but I do have, I'm gonna be annoying and be like, I do think the book is much improved by reading Stella Maris to get like kind of the crystalline, uncut, like intellect portion of McCarthy's final statement. In which I also do agree with Gabe that his brain was fucking fried at the Santa Fe Institute by conversing predominantly with scientists. And I think my top goated McCarthy, having read, you know, not even half, is Sutri still, as like probably, I think I would say, the best thing he ever wrote. Far more like humanistic. I read The Maniac too by Lavatut after this, and I saw fucking Oppenheimer, and I was just so OD'd on like
nuclear bomb. You were nuclear bomb pilled.
I completely just over like the hyper intellectual scientists being driven mad by their insights as in question marks as they try and like render everything into number and like logically capture the world.
It kind of reminds me of Sigma from Overwatch.
Yeah, he's fucking crazy too. And
dude, I have thoughts about this. All right, we'll come back. Patreon.
And so again, like I for those reasons, I actually bump it way down from Gabe's, because I just like, I think what he's driving at and what he's sort of given a final statement on his last attempt to sort of verbalize what it is he's taken from all this. I'm giving it a 3.65.
So similar yeah. score to me.
Yeah, Paul gave it a 3.43534.
Yeah. You know,
I'm gonna defend my score, but I also, and we'll do this in the Patreon, but I also agree.
I think this book with Stella Maris bumps up to like a 4.2 easy.
Do you think that book's better? Do you think that book is better?
No, it's not better. I kind of get I kind of understand thematically why they're separate, but I in my very humble opinion, it feels like it just should have been one thing.
Well, okay, I did watch our boy Orpheus's review of this
book. Shout out. He hates and us.
He does hate us, but the beginning he talks about the publishers releasing this in two different books, partially as a marketing a selling aspect, or you know, trying to make more money by having two different releases, two different books.
Yeah. And if it's that, then that was just pure capitalist, just like wring as much cash out of the final work of this man as we can. But even so, it becomes more like what Gabe's saying, like one of the most beautiful writers that I've read who I just deeply disagree with, like just, and that's fine. And Sutri is still number one.
Jeez.
What's Sutri?
It's about this dude.
That's a book he wrote.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have just gone into the whole plot, but yeah, very good. But yeah, that's my score.
All right. We will come back and continue the conversation after the jump for the patrons, patreon.com/spinecrackers, $2 a month. You can't beat the value, people.
You really can't.
You can't. I mean, what are you going to do? You can't even buy it. You can't even buy a fucking the street with Zin pouch with that shit.
Yeah.
Are we going to do? Continue to not pay for it like most of the world's doing?
Cringe. We will see you there. I want to talk about Hobbs.
All right, dude. You're chopping at the bit. Let's do it. Let's jump over. All right.
Peace.
Bye.
Thank you, spinecrackers.com, Patreon. We don't have a website. Patreon.com/spinecrackers.